Okay, so no interesting Gemara tonight. Two interesting Gemaras, hopefully. And they're interesting, difficult Gemaras to understand. And they end up, they kind of relate to the role of, one role of a woman, I guess, wives, mothers, in the Torah. So it starts off with Rabbi Akiva. Okay, the story of Rabbi Akiva. So, it's a famous story.
It's
the Gemara in Ksuba, so Samach Beis and Beis. Okay, I'll read it out loud outside. So if you have it, great. If you don't have it, they're not all the same Gemara. Yeah. So some of you have Ksuba, some of you don't.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's okay if you don't have it. Okay? So it says, Rabbi Akiva Raya de Ben Kalba Savua. So Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd of Kalba Savua. Kalba Savua, he was Kelev, is like a dog, and Savua is foal. So it means that anyone who went, they say that anyone who's a rich man in Yerushalayim, anyone who'd come to his house hungry as a dog, would go out full. Okay, so he was like I guess the big Baal Chesed, Baal Tzedakah, that kind of thing. So one of his shepherds, he had a shepherd named Akiva. Okay. So Vechazise Barze, the Havetzani of Mali. So the daughter of Kalba Sevua saw Rabbi Akiva. Okay, I'm going to call him Rabbi Akiva. It's hard to call him Akiva. But he was, at that point, he wasn't a rabbi. He was just a regular shepherd.
This was back before day school education. And
Right.
A simple Jew.
So she saw that he was Tzania, and Ma'ali, like good, proper. His midos were good. That kind of thing. Okay.
So,
what?
No? It's like other sports.
I'm sorry. So it says, so he was very, it could be because it's intermission. It could be because it's intermission. Yeah, okay. So it says he was very, I'm just trying to find how they translated here. It says, yeah, he was modest and fine, and a fine character. Okay, so Mali means like proper, better, good, fine. Okay, it's vague. It's a very vague word. But whatever, that's what she saw. So it says, so what happened? So Amra lay, she said to him, Imar kedishna lecha, if I marry you, az lis the Beirav, will you go learn? Will you go to the Beirav to learn, to the Beis Medrash? So Amra lay, sure, I'll do that. So ikdisha le bitzina, they got married in private, okay, vishadarte, and she sent them off. Private, because she knew her father wouldn't be a big fan of her marrying a shepherd. Shepherd, who was basically at that point like an Amaretz, didn't really know anything. So Shama Avuha, so her father heard, Afkal Mibese. He sent her out of the house, Adrohana Aminechsei. She said she can't have any Hanai Meneda, she can't have any Hana from her Nechasim. So he was really upset. Okay, you see why they did it in private. So Azal Yosef Trey Sarishnin Rebe Raf. So he went and learned for 12 years in the Beis Medrash.
Who made the nether?
Her father, when he heard that she married such a person.
Is that applicable to her, his nether?
What? Yes. Well, her, he asserted his nechasim, his staff. Like, I could say about anybody that I make my nechasim are awesome, my staff, my property is awesome for you to have an afram. And then they can't. That's a mechanism. That's a mechanism that allows one to do that. So father could do that to his daughter, make a nether that she can't have any nechasim, any afram, his staff.
Right.
He was a wealthy guy, so that's, you know. Now she's out, doesn't have money now. So he went to the Beis Medrash for 12 years. Okay. So that's what they arranged. They arranged it to be for 12 years, I guess, something like that. He asa. So when he came back home 12 years later, so I see Bahadei, Tre Sari Alfi Talmidi. So he brought back with him 12,000 Talmidi. Okay, so he was very successful 12 years. 12 years, 12,000. Okay, so we went from being a shepherd to having 12,000 Talmidi. So Shamei Lehu Saba, so when he came back, he heard this old man saying to his wife, the Ka'amar La, he said to her, Ad Kama Kamidaberas Amonas Tayim, for how long are you going to live like a widow who has a living husband? It's crazy, are you a widow or are you married? Right, here it is, you're married, and your husband is an absentee husband, right, he's not around, he's nowhere. For 12 years, for how long is this going to go on? So Amra lay, so she said to this old man, Ili didid sayas, if you listen to me, Yosef Trey Sarish Neachrini, he'd sit another 12 years. Okay? If it was up to me, he'd sit another 12 years. So Amar, so Rikiva heard this, and he said, Bershus Kavitna. Apparently I'm doing it with permission. So Hadar Azul, Vyasa Tresar Shnechrini. So sure enough, he turned around and went back and went another 12 years. Doesn't say that he even said Idahar. I don't know. Doesn't talk about that. Okay? Vera, so he went back to the Vyasa Shnechrini.
They didn't have any children.
I don't know. It's not clear if maybe she became pregnant before they went, before he went. It's not clear how, since they got married in private, it's not clear how long that initial period was.
Uh-huh.
Was it a day, a minute, a year? It's not clear. Maybe it was extended, I don't know. Some point in the father.
Kids?
What?
Do we know how many
kids? I don't know. Nothing come to mind. Something for Nakiva?
Well, like, if she didn't have a child before, then 24 years later might be too late for her to even have a child.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Maybe they had two kids? I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know any information about that. Kiyasa, so when he came back, I see Ba'adei Esen Ra'arba Alfei Talmide. So this time he brought back 24,000 Talmide. Okay, after Nasa's 24 years. Another same ratio. Okay, a year, 1,000 Talmide. These are the famous 24,000 Talmide that Rikiva had. These are the ones who died during Sfira, right, during that period. So Shama Devisu. So his wife heard that he was coming back. Havi Kanaf Galape, so this time she went to greet him. Okay. So Amra La Shivavsa, her neighbor told him, Shali Ma'ani Lavush, why don't you get some nice clothing, borrow some nice clothing, they'll see us and cover yourself with them. Why are you going to go to him? You're like in rags. Apparently she wasn't very rich. Her husband's away. Her father, a rich father, said you can't have any anah from Ma'am Chazim. Maybe you should go, you're going to greet Rabbi Akiva, even though you're his wife, but maybe you should look a little nice, something like that, right? Don't wear these rags that you wear. So Amra Lehu is the pasuk in Mishle, Yodea Tzadik Nefesh Behamto. A tzadik knows the nefesh of his behema. Which means, in this context, it means that, I think there, in that case it means like a tzadik knows how to take care of all his, and even his animal there. So she thinks herself as an animal, but he's saying is that he's basically saying he'll understand. He'll understand that the reason why I'm wearing rags is because he left me 24 years ago in order to learn Torah, and I didn't have any money. My father obviously wasn't going to be interested in this thing, and he's not going to hold it against me. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm going to fake that I have a lot of money. I don't have a lot of money. On the contrary, and he'll understand. I mean, hopefully I'll just explain this a little better, but that's what it is. Like. She's like, I don't need to know anything. So, Kimati Legabe, when she reached him, Nafla al Apa, she fell on her face, Kamanashkale Lakari, and she was like kissing his feet. Havikamat Chavela Shame. So his servants started pushing her away. So Amar Lahur, Vikiva said to him, Shavkuha, leave her alone. Shalivishalachem. My Torah and your Torah, all of your Torah, Shalahi, is all ours. It's all because of her. And now she says, Torah Shelimadati Ani, Vishilimadatem Atem, all the Torah that I learned and that all of you guys learned, Ayadahi. Ayadahi. It's all because of her. So don't start pushing her away, you know. Fine. So Shama Avuha Dasa Gavaraba Lamasa. So then their father heard that a great man, Rabbi Akiva, came to town. So Amar Izal Gabe, I'll go to him. Ashad Mefalan Nidroi, maybe he'll be able to uproot my nether. Apparently he didn't like his nether anymore. 24 years later. So Asal Gabe, so she came to him. Amar Leah, Daita the Gavaraba Minadras. If you had known at the time that her husband was going to become a great person, would you have made a nether? He didn't yet know that this was the same person. So he just said that. So he says, no, even if you would learn one parak, one halacha, if he wasn't just a total amaretz, I wouldn't be fine. So Amalei, I know, I'm the guy. So Nafal al Ape v'nashki al Kari. So he fell on his face, and he kissed him on his feet. V'yavlu palgam emoni. And he gave him half his money. Right, so basically ended well, and then Ricky had money and whatever. Okay. Okay, that's funny. It says, Barte de Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva's daughter, so apparently he had a daughter, Avdele Menazek, he did the same deal with Menazek. He sent him away for 24 years. Just like a mother does, so too the daughter does. But she like followed in her mother's footsteps. It seems like it's basically making this. I mean, there's a number of stories like this in the Gemara, but it seems like it's making this into like a very good thing. Right? At least, I don't know, a good thing for everybody, but a good thing in these instances to be like some sort of a model of, right, of greatness.
I don't get it. Like, in what sense did she enable the learning? I mean, it'd be one thing if, like, she had raised the kids on her own, which I guess maybe there's a daughter, so she has it. But, like,
why is acting
like a single guy? She didn't, like...
Yeah, why is learning and living with your wife mutually exclusive? Why couldn't he have been learning with all of his tummy them all those years and still live with his wife and kids? That would have been more of my life, I think, for her, that, like... And for him, I mean, if you're juggling the family life and learning, that's harder than just living the single life and being able to learn all you know.
Right, it's harder, better?
I think when you're juggling and you're struggling to, you know, to make sure that you're... Yeah, I think it is hard. Lefun Saraga, right?
Right, but I mean, if you have one person who's able to, you know, successfully juggle, you know, and manage to devote his time to learning despite all the other things he's doing, and you have another person who's able to devote all his energy to learning. So your assumption is that the person who juggles is better. His learning is better. Like, I understand it's like a cool task that he's able to do that, but in terms of devotion to learning and energy and learning,
the person has like a real talent that they should put as much time into it as they can. But
she recognized
her,
that he had the nature that would be a big talent in learning.
It seems like some sort of interesting thing that she was able to somehow sense that. Right? I mean, that's hard to believe.
Like, yeah, that was what I noticed in the beginning also. Like, I don't know, is there even like such a thing as like a natural thing, a person who's never lived anything in his life and like he has this trait?
She could tell. Right, she could tell. Apparently
say how she was able to tell, just by saying
that. It's Neo-Mali. Yeah. It's very vague.
Was a
I mean, presumably she could tell that he's intelligent. I mean, it doesn't say that, but like, there's a lot of intelligent people out there. Obviously she knew he's intelligent. But that, it doesn't say that because, of course, there's a lot of intelligent people out there. But it's like almost, this is an interesting point, actually, is that it's like more important than intelligence is the proper midos, proper attitude, the perfections. Because if you have intelligence and you have those midos, then, and you put your mind to it, it could be she was setting up a test. She's basically saying is, I'll marry you if you go and learn. Now, a lot of guys would say, no, I don't want that deal. Well, why don't I want to do that deal? In fact, the Gemara talks to a different person who says a similar deal. But he said, her father said, I'll marry you with my daughter, but you have to go learn for 12 years. So he said, okay. Then they brought the daughter, and he saw her. You know, they wanted to, like, make him love her, so then they brought the daughter. And he said, okay, you know what, let's do 6 years. You know? And then they brought her again. And he says, you know what, fine, let's first get married. And because I think it was they were just going to do Kiddushin and then get married when he came back or something. So, you see, like, a normal person wouldn't want this. A normal person would say, what do you mean, I don't want to get married, I don't go away for 12 years. The guy who would want to go wouldn't want it. What kind of, this isn't a people's ideal, fantasy of what it means to get married, right? So, for both, for the guy and for the girl, it's not something that's pleasant for a person on an emotional level. But she threw this out to him, and if he weren't someone who was really devoted to it, he would have said, no, what do I need to do that for? Like, you look like you'll be a great wife, but I'm not interested in this. And this isn't what I want. So she was willing, and she tested him to see whether she asked him, will you go for this plan? And he said, yes, I will go for this plan. I'll do it. So she knew, I guess, he was intelligent, something like that. Yeah, you could tell. She senses midos, and she figured that she could enable this.
Isn't that a big risk to say I'll marry you first and then? How does she know that he's not going to lie and...
Yeah, I guess, what do you think? How do you know?
He could have said, yeah, I'll do that, and then after they're married, he would just say, forget it, I'm not doing
Well, you're saying, how does she know that he has this potential to be Rabbi Akiva? I mean, that's a better question.
Did she know that? How do you know she knew that?
It seems like there's a lot of guys that, why did she marry him? Her father apparently wouldn't have wanted her to marry, whatever, right?
I mean,
why would she marry?
I don't know if she knew he'd be
Rabbi Akiva. No, I don't know if he'd be Rabbi Akiva, but she was willing to put herself on the line to marry this guy. Presumably there were a lot of people, a lot of men out there who had knew a little more than this plain, simple shepherd. So presumably, I don't know if she knew he'd be Rabbi Akiva, but she was willing to give herself up because to let him go and learn, presumably she sensed that he had something special. So if she was willing to do that, I think she could at least judge that he's not going to lie and trick her. Right? That's like...
But like now, you see women tell their husbands to lie, and they do lie and trick them, and they go,
yeah,
do nothing.
You're right, but you're right. But nowadays, women aren't Rabbi Akiva.
No, but
and nor there are women at judging the character.
They all think that they're married this wonderful...
Yeah, they all think they are, but apparently they're not at the same level as this Rabbi Akiva's daughter. I mean, you see Rabbi Akiva's daughter... Basically, he's saying it's all the Torah of Rabbi Akiva and all his Talmidim that due to her. She was apparently going down on the books as being some super special woman. So just because there are people who are there are innocent women who are fooled by their husbands doesn't mean, therefore, it's impossible for a person to be able to judge someone's character. So yes, many people are fooled, but many lesser people than her are fooled. But Rabbi Akiva is of the greatest of the great. And going down, like the Chazals that say, he was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, or Moshe Rabbeinu is wondering why Hashem didn't give the Torah to Rabbi Akiva. So he's not just like, no Tana is just a regular person, and no Tana, Rabbi Akiva is no Tana. He's like a cut above, or I don't know if they're on top, but he's like up there, you know? So he's a very great person, and presumably she was a very great person. This is like one story. These aren't daily stories. Chazal don't recommend the person should do this. Like your average person should do this.
Like she did, you know, she had to know that he was... would be as good as Rabbi Akiva to send him away, or it could just be that what she thought was a good plan.
I don't know. Good question. I don't think it would be. I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not sure. It's a good question. I would think she'd have to know that he's going to be something special. I mean, I think if he's right, to say that he knows he's going to be Rabbi Akiva seems to be steep. How does a person that Rabbi Akiva is like, would he be as great as Rabbi Akiva, or only like Rabbi Meir, or like Rabbi Yossi, or like, I don't know. But it seems like she sensed that he had something special. He wasn't just an ordinary guy. She was giving up. Look, her father would have been happy if she would have married the local Orthodox rabbi or something like that. You know, that would have been fine. But she wanted him. She singled him out. She targeted him, despite the fact that he was an Amoritz at that point. So it must be she sensed that this was something special. But I don't know. That's kind of what the question is. What could we? But one of the questions I want to get is, what could we take from the story? But let's first try to understand it, and then see what we could take from it. You know, at least understand it to the best of our ability. Now,
I still have a hard time with the whole separation from a wife for that many years. Like, why are they even married? They're married in name only. They're not living together as husband and wife.
How does marrying enable him to learn?
One thing is what enabled him to learn.
Why shouldn't he just learn for 24 years and then when he's fully learned, then he can come back and actually get it? I don't understand the concept of, like...
Right.
You know, and also, like, it reminds me a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu separating from his wife and Miriam said Lashon Hara mm-hmm. about it. So, what's the concept of separating from your wife to...
That's a good question.
We're assuming that he never came back, but could it be that he did come back? And, like, you know what I mean? Like, how do we know that he just went away for 12 years and never came back?
Well, it doesn't sound from the story. First of all, he came back after 12 years. I mean, if he came back weekly, then say he came back after 12 years and he overheard a man saying... The story says he came back after 12 years and overheard a man saying, why are you living like an almana? Like a widow when your husband's alive. Presumably that means, why are you living with your husband not around? Now, she could have just said, what do you mean? He comes back every third Tuesday, you know, or whatever. It doesn't seem like that's what happened. So I don't know if it means he never, ever, ever came back.
Right.
I mean, but it sounds from the story, it doesn't even depict the conversation between them in that. It almost sounds from the way it's told. Yet that 12-year point, he overheard this conversation and he just left. It doesn't sound like he stopped the chat. Now, maybe that's not what happened, but it certainly depicts it that way. It's not depicting it in a way that he has these, like, constant visits or whatever. Now, maybe he could have or whatever, but he sensed that she was fine without it. You know? Now, there's a lot of hard questions here, but one question is, I think on the plainest level, why she enabled it is because if not for her, then he wouldn't have learned in the first place. Right? He was just a shepherd. He didn't even know anything about learning. So she's the one whose plan this whole thing was. And she, so to speak, you know, convinced him. She sort of convinced him to be able to go learn because she gave him this deal, right? So apparently, that was, if not for her, the whole he would have still been a shepherd, right? So that's, at the very least, that's what happened. Now, it's a good question about the married. Well, how does it help? How does it help him? I don't know. It's a good question.
He,
I mean,
he did it for a move.
Yeah.
Before he was too old or she was too old, and then he was done with that, so he could go off the floor.
It could be. I mean, there is a thing of, like, a person shouldn't, in general, this is a halacha, a man shouldn't not push off getting married. It's not good for him to have frustrated sexual energy, and it's not good for him to be able to learn. And therefore, it's important for a person to get married before a certain age, like Chazal recommend getting married very young even. So there is an idea, it's like a person's good for a person to be married. You would think that would involve being married and staying with one's wife, not just to be married like in status. There's another idea, though, is like the fact that a person's married is like the fact that they know that they're married and they know in theory their wife is around and they could go home and be with their wife does, in a certain sense, that they Chazal call it pas pasala, like you have bread in your basket. There's an idea, it's like there is a psychological status of being married, both for the man and for the woman. I think a married woman, for instance, this woman, whose husband was away, who knows her husband is coming back, it's not the same thing as living single. Even though, like for instance, there are women who, like my grandmother, my grandfather went to war, in World War II, and my grandmother was home. But like they're still married, they would write letters and stuff together and stuff. But and it doesn't sound like a big deal. His wife would do that. But like she knew she was married, and she knew it was a temporary thing, albeit a very long temporary. And he knew that. But there is an idea of like you know that you're married, you know you have Peruvu. Maybe they'll have kids when they got afterwards, the kids before. She knows that she's married to this great person, and this person coming great. He knows that he's able to have the yeshiva das, like the settled mind, to know that he has a wife. He will have a wife. He's temporarily taking a pause in that involvement to be able to fully involve himself in learning and set up 24,000 talmidim. And that there is a type of a learning. And this is, I think, the case why it doesn't really exist nowadays, because I don't think the men or the women nowadays are of such a level. I mean, the man, like the way we learn, it's not shaykh for us to say, I can't be with anything else. I have to devote all my energy, 100% of my energy, towards learning Torah. I can't even go home to my wife. That's not a normal thing. People aren't at that type of... But there is such a thing like that. There's such a thing that you could devote all your energy. Like, there's an idea of Torah Samnasa. They say that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, like, as much Torah Samnasa, which also doesn't exist now, which means your whole energy is learning. So you're pater in all the mitzvahs. And then they say Rabbi Yehuda Anasi daven once every 30 days. I'm not sure why he had, at least that's why once every 30 days, I don't know. But apparently, like, there's an idea, you can't do a mitzvah. You can't do a mitzvah. He's focused, totally. There's, like, a different level of focus, where all your energy, all your time, everything is devoted towards Torah, towards growing. And look, he was Rabbi Akiva. You're not born a Rabbi Akiva. He wasn't born, he grew up, he was a shepherd. So you see, in these 14 years, he became the Rabbi of 14,000 Talmidim. So presumably he was devoting, hours and hours, and it's not an amount of time, it's a matter of focus. And the idea of having your energy towards your wife and your family and your kids, and like, yeah, it's great to juggle, but there's a reason why they call juggling, and you're not as productive in any of those things insofar as you're totally focused. Now, normally it's fine for people like us who aren't who can't have that focus anyways, right? So for a person nowadays, we can have that focus, and on the contrary, for a person to try to do that, he wouldn't be able to focus on learning, be too distracted, and you think about other things in your body, you do all kinds of stuff. We just don't have that type of a thing. But there is a type of a person who existed then, or in theory could exist now. I don't know, it can't, but I mean, it just doesn't seem like such a thing. It does exist. But she knew that he could have been that, or she at least had that sense, and he did have that sense, and that was, there were arrangements. The story has a few stories of people, but they're isolated. But they are the greatest people, who, like Benazai was another example of a person who was capable of doing that. But she did it, and it seems like it was a praiseworthy thing, right? Okay, and she knew that he would not be, it seems like that's another thing, she knew that he would respect her. She respected her, he respected her totally for it. You see, he basically did not look at all the fact that she didn't look at all dressed or properly, but he knew that this was on the contrary. I think the point is he knew this would increase his love and appreciation for her, because the fact that she's living in poverty is a testament to what she went through and what she sacrificed for the sake of enabling Rabbi Akiva. And it's no small statement. I mean, to say that we have Rabbi Akiva because of her, so it means she partakes. I mean, she's responsible for Rabbi Akiva. So in terms of star, in terms of the service to the Mesorah, she used as much in service to the Mesorah than him. She's the cause of the thing. And that was, that's why she sacrificed herself for that. And that's, again, this is the highest level person. And Rabbi Akiva is the highest level man. And I don't think any man nowadays could be Rabbi Akiva. nor do I think any woman nowadays could do what she did. But I think a man could appreciate the level of Rabbi Akiva and strive for whatever mitzvahs of Rabbi Akiva he could be. As such, similarly, a woman could strive to this level on her level, which is not, you know, certainly far from it, but there isn't a concept is that she was, you know, what she was doing.
There's a biography about a woman, Rabbi Simchai Sarah Kramer. If you ever read it, it's written by Sarah Yochanan Riegler, and it's an incredible book about a contemporary Rebbe who she, her husband basically went away to learn for many years, and she was dirt poor, had nothing, and she didn't have money to fix her teeth, so she'd always like, she like people would be turned off because they would come see her and she didn't have any teeth. She always wore like model's coat, the same model's coat. She switched to another one for Shabbos. Basically, she had two model's coats that she wore all the time because she was so poor. And yet, like, she describes how her house was always a place for guests. She took in foster children, adopted a child who was retarded, who, like, she had to change their diapers well into adulthood. And she was just, like, such a complete tzaddikas. And I can't imagine, like, doing that on her own all those years because she knew that her husband was dedicated to learning. Yeah, it's really incredible book, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to look at another Gemara, but are there any further questions on this? I mean, are we kind of... Okay. So related, it's not a digression, this is like very related. So the Gemara has a story, it has a halacha. There's a halacha about a sota. Okay? So a sota is a woman who, you know, who is accused of having an affair, and she basically... goes, you know, when she's accused of such, she's warned by her husband not to be with so-and-so person, and she does. She's caught in private with this person, so they have these waters, she drinks the waters, and if she was guilty, then she blows up and dies, and if she wasn't, then she's blasted out. So the Pasuk, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says that if she has a zechus, some sort of a merit, then that merit will protect her so that she won't blow up right away, but she'll blow up a few years later, 2-3 years later, whatever, and it'll protect her. So it's a chus, even though there's an onesh, but an onesh of Hashem, it's an onesh min Hashemayim, and an onesh of Hashem isn't so simple. Just because the person deserves an onesh doesn't mean they can't have other zechuyos, other merits, which will protect them, and it won't protect her altogether, but it will cause it a delay in the sentence. Okay? So the Gemara asks, what zechus are we talking about? Okay? What zechus are we talking about? What type of zechus is it that's going to protect her? It says it'll protect her for 3 years. So the Gemara asks, it's on Chaf Aleph and Aleph and Sota. It says, Chuz Demai. Okay, what type of Chuz are we talking about? Ilem is Chuz to Torah. So maybe you'll say it means Chuz of learning Torah. So it says, Bar Ha'ena Mitzuva Ve'oza. But she's not commanded to learn Torah. And apparently, then this is the Gemara says elsewhere, the schar of a person who is commanded to do something is he, so to speak, accepting God's, God set up a system whereby different people have different mitzvahs, and a person who does something optionally is not really doing, being a part of God's system. It's a nice thing, and learning is always great, but the real full schar of Talmud Torah is because God set up a system, and you are aligning yourself with that system. So the saying is, the Gemara is holding that it doesn't make sense that if a woman on her own learns Torah, which is not mandated, it's just because she wants to, although it's nice, it doesn't seem like that should protect her for 3 years. It's not that great. Not that great of a zechus. So what then is her zechus that it's talking about? So it says, Ella zechus to mitzvah. She would say, it's talking about zechus to mitzvahs. Must be, it's not learning Torah, because she's not chayv in that, but she's chayv in a lot of mitzvahs. So maybe it's zechus to mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, no. It says, but the schus of mitzvah be about Nikolai. Does the schus of mitzvahs really protect a person that much? And the Gemara goes through a long digression to show how the schus of Torah is that much greater than the schus of mitzvahs. And the schus of mitzvahs is much smaller. The essence of schusim is in Torah, and mitzvahs is like, I guess, a means or something like that, but it's not as primary as Torah, and therefore I mean, with that, I don't go through all the back and forth, but it's basically, it doesn't seem to be that a mitzvah should really give you that level of protection. So you kind of, what's kind of caught is Torah, is that which gives you the highest level of protection, but one is not chayav in Torah. And it's only if you're mechuyava. On the other hand, mitzvahs aren't really, don't seem to be giving that level of protection. So if it were a man, we could understand what would be giving him this protection. But a woman, what exactly is it? So the Gemara comes around at the end, it says like this. So the Gemara comes back around, this is Ravina. There's different answers to the Gemara. Ravina says, really it's chesed Torah. It says she's not commanded in Torah. So it says it's true. Nei debikudi lo mefkida. It's true she's not commanded, but be'agra demakrin umasnian benayu, with the reward that she is like involves herself into getting her children to learn. Rashi says she brings them to school to learn Mishnah, to learn Psukim, to whatever. She really involves herself in making sure that her sons are involved in Torah. And she waits. She waits for her husband until he comes back, or from a different city, Rashi says. When he likes this Rabbi Akiva thing, when he learns Torah, Milo Palgan Behadayu. Don't they split in the schar? In the schar of Torah? And that's basically how he ends. That's how he concludes. So he says that she really is chas Torah. But how could this chas Torah be so great? The woman isn't commanded to learn Torah. So the saying is that in the schar that she enables, the Torah of her sons and of her husband, her children in her upbringing of them in a way which is in line with Torah, and the husband that she enables them to learn. So it says she'll split in his schar, right? So what does it mean she'll split in his schar? What's the sense? Because I think this is like a little bit tricky, because you usually think of the schar of Torah as a person's involved in Torah. So the man is sitting and learning Torah, and he's involved in the ideas of Torah. But in what way? It seems to be it's not true. Or at least it lends itself to a splitting arrangement going on here. Right? So how is there a split? It is a similar idea, like by Yisachar and Zvulun. It's maybe a similar idea. Is that Yisachar is learning Torah, and Zvulun is supporting him. And they say they split the schar. So it seems like it's not so simple. Like, we usually think of it, the schar of learning is because you're involved in ideas, and you come close to God through the ideas, but Zvulun isn't involved in ideas that way. And this woman, this Isha Sota, isn't involved in ideas. And Rabbi Akiva's wife isn't involved in ideas. I mean, yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't think it means they were doing nothing. No relationship to ideas. But at the same time, it seems to be, it's saying, the schar of this woman, the schar of Zvulun. It's not a man-woman thing, it's Zvulun also. The schar of Rabbi Akiva's wife, that is Har Torah, is equal. So it's not a man-woman thing, it's just that the woman could partake of the schar as well. So maybe can we understand, like, what's the schar for exactly, and how is this the schar of Torah? Why is it the schar of Torah? Why isn't it just like a mitzvah now? Because mitzvahs are a lower level than Torah. So, like, in what way is this the Schar Torah? You know, what is the concept of the Schar Torah such that the woman or Zvulun could partake of it? Right, you follow me?
How do I hand it out?
Yeah, like, what does that mean? Is it like Schar? You see, we don't really think, I guess this is the point. He's like, if you think of Schar as just like you get, like, you know, stars, God gives you points for these great things that you do, then it's easy. And you just say, well, this is schar. So there's bonus points for each thing, and there's a point system, and there's so many points you get for each thing. But we don't like to think of it that way, right? Everyone who's been around the block knows that, you know, that's how we think of it when we're kids, but then we quickly, you know, stop being in shape to think that's not the way these things work. It's not a matter of a point system. But at the same time, if it's an intrinsic thing, which means the degree which you're attached to knowledge of God and ideas and all that, this doesn't seem to be endorsing such a thing, because then how could you say that Zvulun is like Yisachar, and how could you say that the wife is like the husband, and how could you say Rabbi Akiva's wife, right? It seems to be leaning more towards a schar as if it's like some super added doled out point system thing. Right? So, how could we, I guess, resolve the two things? You know, these Gemaras with our idea that it's not all a point system. You know, where is this a raya for the point system?
Well, one thing that the people, like the woman or a wife is doing, is that the reason they're enabling it is because they think that it's important to have,
yes,
like Torah in the right world or whatever being learned.
Yes.
So it's not like they have nothing to do with it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's the same thing as actually learning.
Okay.
But they are kind of submitting themselves to this mitzvah.
Right. Right. Okay. I hear you. Okay.
And also, like, they're not directly involved in the learning, but they are very much indirectly involved in the learning. You know, like, every time they work for their money, they're giving a lot of their money to God.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So, like,
yep.
it's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, even though they're not actually learning, they're enabling it, and they're...
Right.
And, you know,
it's always in the back.
Like, they're involved.
Mind.
That's what, yes, I'm trying to say.
Uh-huh.
It's always, okay, in the back of their mind that the reason that they're—I mean, it was. I'm sure it was 24 hard years to,
yeah,
raise kids on her own.
Yeah.
So she had to constantly be telling herself, "I'm doing this because I know that that it's important,
right,
for my husband to learn,
right,
Torah."
Right. Correct.
But why is it important for her,
right,
to learn Torah? And she had to keep.
Right. Yes. Correct. Yep. Right, okay, good. So it seems like you have to say that the schar of Torah is not the involvement in the ideas themselves. But it's like, I think a lot of what I'm saying might be based on something Rabbi said years ago, so I'm just saying it over, but that is not based on the ideas themselves, but on like the attachment of the personality to Torah. The devotion of the personality to the value of Torah and of Kiddush Hashem, which Torah brings about. And the God, the Shem Hashem, exists in this world through Torah, through the maintenance of the Torah. The Torah is a body of knowledge which maintains ideas about God, ideas about how to live in the world. And through the Mesorah, through the Torah being perpetuated, the world at large has access to proper ideas about God and a proper way of life. And that's the value of having the Mesorah and of having Talmud Torah being maintained. Is Torah is every mitzvah of the Torah embodies different ideas about perfection, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about evil, bad ways. You know, and through the way these ideas are maintained are not through some abstract philosophical system. Those types of systems aren't kept, aren't maintained. They fall out of favor in a few years or a few generations. The ideas of the Torah are maintained are through the system of Torah, through the mitzvahs, through Talmud Torah. And the Talmud Torah it works through Mesorah because there are people devoted towards learning Torah. And that role is given to the men. But that role, the men cannot do that on their own. It can't be. A man needs to have a support system. And some, not all men can do it. Like, since a support system might be in the form of a zvulun, it might be in the form of a wife, but the point is, it might be in the form of a mother. But the idea is that the husband, the Rabbi Akiva, and his wife are both devoting their life, sacrificing there in a certain sense. Rabbi Akiva sacrificed his marital life; she sacrificed her marital life. So yes, he was involved in learning Torah. She was involved in whatever else she was doing. I think if they're kids, we don't really know. But the point is that they both devoted their lives, and yeah, on a day-to-day basis, we're thinking, I'm doing this, I'm living this life, because I realize more significant than my personal involvements is the maintenance of the Torah. And if the mother is bringing her kids to Beit Sefer and to make sure and make sure they're involved in learning, and she's making sure her husband's involved in learning, or as the villain is working our hard hours and trying to make sure Yisachar is able to learn. So they're all equally devoting all their energies to Torah. to the maintenance of the Torah. And their soul, their personality, is devoted and attached to Torah as being the reality beyond all their other personal pursuits. And that's what the Sar is based upon. It's not based upon the pieces of knowledge in your brain, so to speak. It's based upon the attachment of the self to the Torah, to Shem Hashem, to Kiddush Hashem as an ideal, which is enabled in different ways through different people. Different ways for men, different ways for women, different ways for Kohanim, different ways for Levim, different ways for Israelim, different ways for Yisachar, different ways for Zvulun. So, but all, everybody in the system is involved in the same idea, which is maintaining the system, maintaining the Shem Hashem in the world through the Torah. And the Torah sets it up through giving out different roles and different, you know, towards different people. But the schar that she has in allowing her husband and her children to learn, you see, it's saying it's greater than the schar she would have in learning Torah herself. Because you see the schar of her learning Torah herself, it says that can protect her. It's not great enough. She could be learning Torah, learning up a storm, as much as the next guy. But that's not her, that's not, she's not mitzvah on that. That's not the way God set up the system. And on the contrary, the part of the woman who's enabling her husband and her sons to learn, she's going to partake of the schar. Milo palgan ma'adoy means she'll split with the husband. So that's her schar, and that's her role.
She had to have had some knowledge of Torah in order to realize
yes.
It was important.
Yes, you're right, I think so. I don't think it means that a woman has no knowledge and no appreciation of Torah, because you're right, otherwise how could you do that? It's just like a simple-minded saying Torah's great. Well, I don't think it would enable a person to do such a thing. Yeah. You know, I don't think Zevulun, although he was supporting Yisachar, was just an Am Haaretz. Of course not. He was learning Torah as much as he could, but he wasn't learning like Yisachar. Yisachar was learning like Rabbi Akiva was learning. You know, Zevulun was learning in his free time. Was he Lam Shuri is a greater Lamdan than anyone nowadays, or, you know, the greater knowledge than people, you know? But it's different. And again, I don't think you're right. She was the daughter of Kalba Zavua, who you see was, although he seemed to be whatever, he wanted his daughter to marry a Talmud Chacham. That was kind of his thing. That's why she. Yeah, because he valued it. And you see, he was known for his tzedakah. So he was a wealthy person, but he was very, very giving. So he was a high level person. I don't know if we know more about him or not. Maybe we do. But he was a high-level person. She grew up in that house. Her mother presumably was a high-level person. You see her daughter also. She taught her daughter, and her daughter continued. That's what it says. Her daughter did the same thing. Not only did she raise her sons and her husband, or I don't know who her sons or whatever, but you see her, she raised her daughter in a way that her daughter emulated that also. And because of that, we have Ben Azai. Not only do we have Rabbi Akiva, we have Ben Azai because of her. So, presumably because of her mother and because of her father, she grew up in that home, and she had those values, and she was attached to Torah also. So on what level? But it doesn't seem like she was sitting in the base medrash and learning. That wasn't the type of learning she was doing. It doesn't seem so. It's not portrayed as that. But that's not where, that is a necessity in the system of the Torah. It must exist that somebody's doing that, because the Torah has to be maintained. But not every person has to be doing that. She could be doing just understanding Chumash and Rashi and ideas and, you know.
She has to know enough to eat in the
kosher kitchen.
Yes, of course. She has to know enough to, you know.
Yes, and to appreciate what Torah is.
The day-to-day halachos of everything that you do. Like,
yes.
She has to know.
Yes, and presumably she had to understand all the hashkafa of the Torah and the value system of the Torah and the midos of the Torah. And of course, a person without a great level of perfection isn't going to be able to do this. And she was daily devoted. How could you devote your energy and sacrifice yourself to this unless you have such an appreciation of what Torah is? And she did. And that's why she was able to do it. And that's why she goes down on the books as being this great, unique person. You know? But I think, again, I think what's important to take from this stuff, from this, and both of these things, is like, For guys, I think for a share to guys, I'd say, if you see this, I'd say to guys, listen, you can't be a Rabbi Akiva. Don't pretend like you could just say, listen, I'm going to just get married and leave my wife today. You know, you can't do that. We don't learn like that these days. We could try to learn a little more than we think we're able to. We could push ourselves to maintain, for the sake of continuing Torah, continuing Masorah, maybe push ourselves a little harder, maybe wake up a little earlier, maybe stay up a little later, maybe devote a little more time to learning instead of doing whatever else. You know, that's, we could take the model of what we see from the great people of our Masorah, from the Avos, from everything. I mean, the way the Torah is not to copy great people, because great people are great people. We're not great people. We have to, but even though we can't copy them, we could see what they represent in their ideals and try to internalize them into our lives on our level. You know, so we can't copy Rabbi Akiva, but we could learn from Rabbi Akiva. I think the same thing is the case with women, is that a woman can't copy Rabbi Akiva's wife. It's not normal these days, you know. But at the same time, one could study the model which she represented, or study, see what the Gemara and Sota is about, and in our small way, in our life, try to, you know, take that into account. Is that the goal should be, both for men and for women, is that we're involved as one link in a system which spans the generations, which is maintaining the Shem Hashem in the world through Torah. And whatever part we could play in that, some of us big, some of us small, but the degree to which we could devote ourselves to that, and albeit at the expense of certain sacrifices that we make, then we partake of a greater star and a greater attachment to the Torah. But of course, on our level, if a man tries to push himself and learn all day and all night, he's going to crash. And he's not going to be happy, and he's not going to learn. And he's going to end up being non-productive, and it's not good for him. Can't do it if you're not at such a thing. And if a woman would say, you know, that's it, I'm never going to just go, just leave my husband, let him learn as much as he wants and never be with him, and totally leave, you know, give up my life with my husband. That would also be, she's not going to be happy, she's not going to be able to be a good wife, be able to be a good mother. So, you know, so that's not, I don't think the message of these stories is try to do that. But that doesn't mean that a woman can't learn in a small way and try to win her life as much as possible. Not everyone is capable, not everyone's husband is Rabbi Akiva. And not everyone's children are, or whatever, but the system works because there are many people on many different levels. There's Rabbi Akiva, and there's lesser people, and there's plenty of people. And the system, the Torah is for everybody, on every level. So, a person, a man can't be Rabbi Akiva, but he may be able to be a plain Pashut Yid who learns, goes to work during the day, and learns at night, and devotes his energy, and that's also maintaining the Torah. And the woman's husband might be a Rabbi Akiva, another woman's husband might be that plain guy who comes home from work very tired at night, and the wife allows him to learn an hour a night, and he's able to be able to maintain the Torah and see his the kids learning Torah. You know, like that's, there's many, many levels that this thing exists upon. So like the model is Rabbi Akiva, but I don't think a person, a man or a woman should say, well, that's not me. That's true, but the Torah, this is the highest level, but it exists on many levels. But, you know, and each person in their life could build this into their life and try to incorporate it, you know, as is appropriate for them. Good? Question?
Let's say you had, like, right, you had, like, Yisachar and Zvulun, right? And they got to the same, they start, like, start off, you know, at the same level. Meaning they have certain philosophical and whatever learning basis and attachment. And now Zvulun, I don't know what he does, right? He goes fishing or whatever it is to support himself and Yisachar and Yisachar.
Yes.
Right? How is their attachment to Torah and, like, keep progressing in the same way? Like, wouldn't you think that Yisachar's attachment was still going to develop more?
That's a good question. Because he has more knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different. I mean, yes, there is a certain thing. In one sense, yes. In another sense, Zvulun is going to have to struggle, and this is, I think, a point Ayala made. Like, the wife may have to struggle day to day having to work. And despite that he'd love to be learning, he has to fight the world and deal with a lot, you know, conquer his Yetzer in a certain way, where he has to say, I want to learn, but I'm going to force myself to do this because I have a greater attachment. I realize Torah is much more significant than the pain that I'm going to have in working. You know, and the fact that he does that, every time he does that, he kind of further attaches himself to the value of Torah, which he knows. He knows what Torah is. He has proper ideas of Torah. And that, in that sense, in a certain sense, Yisachar isn't doing that. Although he might, to a certain sense, be doing that, but at the same time, he doesn't have, like, Chazal, like Al says, Lufun Tzara Agra. means there is an idea of like the degree that there's a tsar, you overcome different emotions and different attachments. And in a certain sense, because through that exercise of conquering all those, you know, attachments, he could thereby remove his energy from the physical and from this world and be able to attach himself to Torah in a way which Yisachar may or may not have. So it's hard. On the other hand, Yisachar has other stuff. He could see the beauty of the Torah, and that could draw him to, you know. So there's strengths and weaknesses. So I don't know if it's going to be identical, but at the same time, it's not like a clear, Yisachar has much more things than Zvulun has. They're different, you know. So the woman who could have to struggle with the day-to-day, you know, raising the kids and keeping the house and all that, is, you know, who has her focus on Torah, so that's could attach her to the Torah in a way which the guy who's sitting and learning might not be doing, you know. But the guy might all, you know, so it's different, I'd say. Not equal, but different, you know. Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting, the system. I mean, I guess you have to appreciate the idea of the system that God set up. Is the way the Torah is maintained. And it's easy to see, I think, I like, because when people look up bent out of shape about this one, the woman thing. I mean, nowadays it's like a hot topic, the women's rights type of thing, you know? But I always like to tie it back to Kohanim and Yisraelim, because we don't relate to it so much in this society. But I'm sure you know that a Kohen in the time of the Mikdash doesn't work. I mean, his job is 2 weeks a year he works in the Mikdash, and the rest of the year he learns Torah. And he's supported by all the Maras Kohanim. He teaches. He's a rabbi, he's a teacher, and he's supported by the Am. So he's sitting and learning, when he's being supported by all the hard-working Yisraelim and Levium. And the Yisraelim and Levium are fighting for Yisrael rights and saying the Torah is whatever the parallel of sexist is and whatever, and saying it's not fair to Yisraelim and the Torah isn't right and it doesn't appreciate Yisrael's rights, and, you know, saying we want equal rights, but that's not the system of the Torah. The Torah has man, has woman, has Israel, has Levium, and Kohanim. And Israel has to appreciate his level, has to appreciate the fact that you can't have everybody being Kohanim. Korach wanted everybody to be Kohanim. But the Torah, the way the system works, is the fact that there is a division of labor, and they're Kohanim, and they're Levium, and they're Israel. And they're men, and they're women. Would everyone want to be a Kohen? Yeah, maybe there would be their advantages to being a Kohen. But Israel has an advantage also, that he gets the support of coming. And there's a man and a woman, and that's part of our accepting of the fact that the system demands that there are different types of people and there are different roles, and therefore we have to appreciate the fact, we have to accept the fact that's the system, and we have whatever role we happen to be in. Be it a Israel, be it a man, be it a woman, be it a Kohen. Kohen can't feel superior, he feels this is his role, and he has to step up and he has to do his role, and yeah.
The woman's rights issues come up when you have certain from communities that impose even greater restrictions upon women than the Torah would, and then suddenly it's like women are not allowed to drive, women have to shave their heads,
that's true. Well, that's the difference.
When you
the
force women to do things that are demeaning, or to restrict them an extent.
That's true. That's one area. But another area comes up is because in the modern world, there's an idea of that everyone's equal. The modern world wouldn't be happy with Kohanim and Yisrael. The man isn't happy with man and woman. They want everyone to be the same. There's no difference. There's no such thing as man as woman. They're just people. You know. So not because even without shaving heads, it's just like they want to basically everyone should have an equal opportunity to rise to the top. And blacks and whites should have equal opportunities to rise to the top and to be in whatever job, and men and women, and call them Yisraelim, and it's just like, you know, there's a big push of equal rights, you know. And but there is an idea of differences, and there's an idea of a system which God set up. It's not so easy to construct Klal Yisrael and to construct the Torah, which is maintained the Torah. God set it up. God thought it was a good idea to have Kohanim and Levim and Yisraelim and men and women. And that's the way. And you could appreciate that. You could appreciate the fact that that's the case. You could think into it and see why it is. But it's not a popular idea. But I think this goes some way in saying is, well, you think of it as like all the stuff. The main thing is the learning Torah. You see, from this thing, it's not true. The main thing is this attachment to Torah and the supporting of the Torah, which is, like, you think the men have like a primary role. In a certain sense, it's the more direct role. of maintaining the Torah. But as someone said, the indirect role and the necessary. That's what says meaningful apologies. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. All of our Torah, said this to his 24,000 Talmidim, is all ours. It's all because of her, because she enabled it. So who's responsible? Whose devotion and foresight is responsible for the Torah being maintained? It's ours. Now, yes, he's the direct vehicle of doing it. And they look at him as the Rebbe, but she says, hey, don't look at me. Look at her. So he told them where the credit is due. You know, that's, you know, the woman wearing the ragged clothing. She's the one who's really responsible for it. So that's the way to look at it. So that's not, you know. But it doesn't have the limelight. People these days are looking for, you know, it doesn't have that type of a thing. Anything oftentimes in this society, everything, people are looking for like that. Men are looking for that, one for looking, everyone's looking for that kind of, like, who has that position. You know. But
society doesn't value the role that's a private role. Like,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
The fact that people are raising the children are doing an important job.
Yes. Yes. It's very interesting. That's very important. I think that thing that Rabbi Akiva, that her daughter was, did the same thing, and it was from the Benazai, and says, it makes an equation, like Rachel, the Bas Rachel, and like kind of the way the mother's like the way of the daughter. It's not only in raising her sons, it's in raising her daughters also. And you see her daughter enabled Rabbi Akiva also. So the role is of utmost importance. I mean, that's an undervalued role in today's society, you know.
Also, the way, like just the way you said that the Kohanim were basically, they were being supported as teachers.
Yes.
Our society doesn't value the role of teachers either.
That's true.
We don't pay our caregivers or our teachers nearly as much as they deserve to be paid.
That's true.
Well, that's kind of humbling, because if you here, I understand, like, wow, like, learning is really important. Then, like, the next, logical in quotes, like, the next, like, pseudological step is like, well, then my learning is really important.
It's true. But I think it's helpful to think of the Kohanim being living in Israel, because the Yisrael should say, my learning is important. But no, your learning is that you should go out and learn and work for the year, and you should support the Kohanim's learning. Yes, you should learn, but he's going to learn a lot more than you. You know, doesn't mean you're not going to learn at all, but he's going to learn a lot more. But it's the measure of a person isn't by how good of a lamdan he is and how many hours they learn Torah. You see, it's the devotion that their attachment to the Torah, and that could exist for different people on different things. And it doesn't mean, presumably, again, I think it's important that Zvulun learned. No doubt he learned. Not like Yisachar, but he learned. And I think the role of a woman, she should attach herself to Torah. I don't think it means, that can mean different things to different people. She attached herself to learning on our level, whatever. Obviously, oftentimes a person who's devoting their life to supporting a house isn't going to be able to learn the same way as a man. But at the same time, if she values the Torah, presumably she's going to be discussing ideas as much as is within her capacity. She'll be involved in the values of the Torah, involved in chesed, involved in whatever ideals the Torah maintains, and that's that in her way. You know, I mean, it's not, woman's led us, her husband, to learn, but she's involved in doing all kinds of lowly types of things. Obviously, that's not the model which we're talking about. So there's much work for a woman to do in her life in terms of, you know, in terms of attaching herself to the model of the Torah.
So if the model is that men are mitzvah to learn Torah, then is it implying in the fact that they're commanded to learn Torah that they're more suited to that calling, let's just put it that way, and women are more suited to a different calling? Or, like, and if that's the case, then what do you say about the exceptions to that rule where there are certain men that are not suited to that calling, and what are they supposed to do?
Okay, so first of all, would you say, I don't know the answer to this, but would you say that Kohanim are more suited to the calling than Israel?
That's part of the same question that
right.
I'm asking.
Right. I would think Kohanim...
There are probably Kohanim that are not suited to
that. Right. So I would think, first of all, Kohanim, I guess, are, because they're Bnei Aaron, and the Shevet Levi wasn't Chotem in the Chedah Egel. It originally wasn't going to be them, it was going to be Bechoros. So there's a historical reason why, and they could identify with Kohen and Aaron. And then also, individuals who aren't, the answer is, individuals who aren't. But there has to be a system. Just like in everything in the mitzvos, is everything is systematized. And if you have it hefker, like each generation, a person could figure out, I think it would be better for me to think about Hashem by putting blue strings, garments full of blue, like that was Korach's argument, that doesn't work. You need a system, and the system has to be uniform. So you can't say, well, if you're not so good at learning, then you don't be a Kohen, and you're Israel, you should be, let's just switch it all around. So you have to have a fixed system. So I'd say the same thing is, I guess it would seem to be a fair deduction that as a group, men are a better vehicle for this than women. On one level, because they don't have children. And that's, you know, just on a practical level. Maybe there's deeper levels, and presumably there are, but on a very plain level, it's not, if you want to have the one, you know, a woman wouldn't be able to go to the Beis Medrash for 12 years, because she's going to have kids, and a man could. And I guess in this case, I don't know if she had kids, but in general, but I, a particular man who isn't fit for it, so it's true. Not every man, as long as Rabbi Akiva, but every man on his level should be involved in Torah. And a particular woman is able to, fine, but the Torah has to make, just like a particular Israel can't become a Kohen because he's fit, as a particular woman can't become a man because she's fit. It doesn't mean she can't learn. And you see, like, for instance, Berea, and there are models of women and who did become very great in Torah. But just as a system, that's not her role in the system, and therefore she's not going to have the star of Mitzvah Osev accepting God's system and being that, playing the role which God determined for her. At the same time, the Torah doesn't prevent a woman who's so moved to be able to do such a thing. And Yisrael, who's so moved, could also devote his energies all to Torah. I don't think Rabbi Akiva was a Kohen. I don't think. But it's not, if the lines aren't 100% fixed, but there is a uniformity in the systemization of this concept through the group of Kohanim of Israel and men and women. You know, but it's not rigid in a strong way. You know, halachically, certain halachos which are, you know, which draw lines, like Yisrael can't do avoda, but Yisrael could devote his whole self to learning. You know,
it seems a little bit unfair that a man who, even if he just learns a tiny little bit because he's mitzvosa, is going to get more schar than a woman who learns like entire Gemara and knows it backwards and forwards, and she doesn't get the same schar because she...
Well, she could get that same schar by supporting her children and her whatever and learning. She could get more schar by devoting herself in that regard.
What if she never marries and never has children?
That's true. But then I guess if she can't, she can't, then that's her, you know, then she could support her in different ways. I mean, each person has to find, like, let's say a man can't learn. Like, there's the different people have different callings in life, and they have to find their place. And Torah is a big system with a lot of different, talks to a lot of things with a lot of different people. So there are different roles that different people could play. If a person can learn, so maybe he could support learning. And if a woman doesn't get married and can't have children, then she could support it in her own way. I mean, they're different. There's models, and then there's certain models which are set up, but then the system talks and has different things to different people, and a person has to use their chachma to take from the system and be able to adjust it as is their, you know, as is appropriate for them. But then the Torah still has the model. You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. Question?
Maybe like a just technical question on the word.
Yes.
Of splitting.
Splitting.
Is that just saying the fact that she's supporting him like proportional to what she's doing to support him, she's going to get reward, or is it like because he was Rabbi Akiva and not, you know, Rabbi Meir, she got more schar?
That's a good question. Does it mean like a 50-50 split of whatever he gets and then he split it? I don't know. I would think it means, I think it means on our level. I mean, like maybe Rabbi Meir's wife could get more star than Rabbi Akiva's wife if she's she's more devoted. I would think. I don't really know, but I would think it's like it's talking in a general way that she partakes. I don't know if split means 50-50. I mean, she partakes of it. You know, she shares in it. You know, something like that. Yeah, if Rabbi Akiva happens to exceed the mayor because of his great devotion, I don't know if she's necessarily going to get a bonus because of that. If it's unbeknownst to her, it has nothing to do with her. I don't think so. But I don't know. Who knows? I'm not sure. It's hard. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. Yeah. Alrighty? Okay.